Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You are listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and have on the political right, Senator Dan McKay. Hi, Dan.
Hello, everyone, and Merry Christmas.
And on the political left, Councilwoman Shireen Gourbani.
Hello. Hey to the listeners.
So we are using the next couple of weeks to do something a little different. We want to help explain the people behind the ideologies. And so we're going to be today focusing on Dan and talking about the political right, learning a little bit more about Dan and about the ideology that he espouses. So Shireen, I'm going to turn it to you.
All right.
Finally, we're going to talk more about me.
Well, everyone's been waiting for it.
But you're dying.
So tell me a little bit about where you grew up, because you did not grow up in Utah.
I did not. Let's see. Depending on the health of my parents' relationship when I was a kid, is kind of dictated where we lived. My mom was from San Diego, California, and my dad was from St. Louis, Missouri. They met when he was serving in the U.S. Navy. And they were walking around Balboa Park, which if you're from San Diego, they know it well. And they met, there's a little bridge that's out there. They met kind of walking along that bridge. That's kind of how they started. And my mom was really young and so was my dad. And they got married and had, three kids in 3 years.
Yeah.
Super
three
fast.
In 3 years.
Three
well,
in three
where are
years.
You in birth order, Dan?
I'm number one. That doesn't surprise anybody.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so, and ironically, my brother, Eric, so it goes Daniel, Patrick, Eric. My brother Eric is exactly 3 years younger than me. So we were born on the same day.
Oh, wow.
And so it's pretty exacting as far as, and then my middle brother, Patrick, is right in the middle. So anyway, I grew up between San Diego and Missouri. I guess I was in San Diego through the time I was in kindergarten, Missouri till I was in kindergarten. And then we did kindergarten out in California when my mom and dad kind of broke up. And we spent a little bit of time back in St. Louis and then most of the rest of my life in San Diego. So.
And what kind of, so he was in the military.
Uh-huh, military.
And what kind of work did she do?
So my mom, she did lots of stuff. By the time like we were three, I remember my mom was leaving, breaking up with my dad and they were going to get a divorce. I remember as she was, kind of leaving and trying to figure out what she was going to do. She was working in a warehouse or a manufacturing facility called Gusdorf in Missouri. And we got some housing assistance and we were living in, kind of in an apartment temporarily. And sometimes that wouldn't work out. And so mom would, work in this manufacturing deal. And my brothers and I were super young. But I remember there were times when, mom would take us to the factory with her and we would be sleeping out in the car while she was working a late night shift. And she'd come out in the morning, 6 o'clock or 6:30 when her shift was over and take us, get us ready for school and that kind of stuff. And we spent, not a lot, but we spent time as homeless people, trying to figure out how to balance all that stuff.
Yeah.
So Dan, flash.
And she worked at the post office too, which was fun as well. So anyway,
flash forward to you're wearing right now an Aggie hat.
Yeah.
Somehow you made it to Utah and you made it to Utah State University.
Yeah.
Tell us that.
I served a LDS mission, at the time I was, 20 years old and, I went to India. While I was on my mission and I served.
Unbelievable. And it was probably pretty early for the LDS Church to be in the country.
Very early. There weren't very many missionaries, especially Americans that were serving in India at the time. And it was, a brand new mission, a new mission president, Gucharan Gill, who was a math professor at BYU. It was a great opportunity. There were very few, missionaries and we were spread out all over the country and I served 8 months in Calcutta, India.
Unreal.
We did service projects with Mother Teresa. Literally she's working right there and that was, very formative.
See, and Shireen, I don't think our listeners would have any idea that this conservative Dan, had a upbringing that required public assistance and that he spent some time in the ghettos of Calcutta.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting. What'd you study at Utah State?
I graduated from Utah State in education, believe it or not, with social studies was my education degree. had a minor in economics. That's, you know, it's enough to be dangerous, as Natalie would probably point out. But I have thought about, like, I really love the economic side of things. And I found out too late that I really liked economics. But I really loved that in U.S. history. So I studied U.S. history and U.S. political theory and that kind of stuff a lot. And so that's probably, those were my two passions in college.
Were you the kind of kid who, like, would get into trouble?
All the time. Yeah. You know, yeah. I mean, it's,
and that shouldn't surprise our listeners because he gets into the trouble on the air as well.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. And you know, I appreciate our listeners being as patient as they are with me on a regular basis. I mean, this is...
Sometimes they're impatient with you.
Well, yeah, but you know, it's well-placed. I mean, and I'm constantly still learning. I mean, I'm a, you know, to borrow from Joseph Smith, right? He was a rough stone rolling, right? That was the phrase that was used frequently to describe him. And I feel that way. And every once in a while, the listener comes by and they'll holler at me for one thing or another. And maybe it'll knock a little edge off and I'll go and work on that issue and try to be more responsive to that stuff. I don't know. I think I learned this throughout. I've just had great examples in my life who I've watched constantly learning. Mm-hmm. And I've always felt that life is just this, you're constantly learning, you know, and you're right until your assumptions are wrong. And then you got to readjust your assumptions.
Dan, it's one of my good fortunes to know your wife, Tawny. She's also an Aggie. Is that where you met?
Yeah. So we met up at Utah State. I was teaching seminary for the LDS Church at the time. And, her little brother was in the class next door and heard that I was single and yada, yada, yada. He made an introduction. And honestly, I mean, I can say this without a doubt. I would not be half the person I am today without her influence. I mean, literally, so much has gone right in my life because of who I married.
Yeah. And she's an amazing person. And for our listeners, she's also an elected official in the...
She serves on the Riverton City Council.
I get Bluffdale and Riverton.
Yeah, yeah.
And stuff.
She serves on the Riverton City Council and has done that now for 3 years. She's up for election next year.
Yeah. Dan, we have so much we want to cover, but you asked me a question I want to ask you. When did you first have like a political inkling in your in your upbringing? I mean, I mentioned the Vietnam War when you guys were peppering me. What was it that triggered your interest?
The Berlin Wall coming down.
Yeah. That's a good one. And isn't it interesting that these are dramatic events? Can't wait to ask Shireen later about that. But
I can watch the clip of President Ronald Reagan standing outside the Berlin Wall and demanding that Gorbachev tear down this wall.
Yeah.
Right? I can watch that.
It was so radical at the time when he did that, by the way.
I can watch that clip and immediately. So I was born in 74, right? And I think that was 82, 83, if I remember right. Anyways, I'll remember here. Somebody, a listener will email me and remind me.
Yes.
But I'm automatically taken back to that horrible orange couch that we had in our living room and watching the TV and seeing that moment. And it made such an impression on me that this is important. And then you fast forward to the wall coming apart and the students.
It was unbelievable.
Pieces of it coming down. Like, I have a piece of the Berlin Wall, right? And for me, it's just that early memory of change and that things can change because of political people being involved.
So you went to law school with the idea of being a practicing attorney? I know you went to University of Oregon?
I went to Willamette, which is in Salem, Oregon. And I went to law school with the idea that I had loved the study of U.S. economic, U.S. theory, U.S. history, all that stuff. And the great people who'd been involved had all had law degrees, right? Mm-hmm. Or had some background in the law. And so I thought that kind of education was really important. And I'll remember I had just finished my master's degree from Utah State. And I went home and my
wife was like,
in 2000.
Oh, what was it? It's the study.
Oh, it was in instructional design, which was, you know, basically economic theory, education theory as applied to business and training. So, I just finished my master's degree and I came home and talked to my wife and I said, I have always wanted to go to law school. And I feel like we had just had our first daughter and I'm like, I feel like I'm going to miss that opportunity if we don't do it now. And this is just her credit, right? This is just one of those things where she just literally changes my life in such a small thing. She just looks at me and says, let's go.
Let's do it. So you pay for it with student loans? Just curious in both of these.
So I had scholarships. And so that was one of the reasons that kind of I chose the school I did was scholarships were a big part of my education. And so I did pay for my undergrad, part of my undergrad, until I got in student government.
Dan, were these scholarships on merit or needs-based?
All merit-based.
Okay.
Yeah. So
I think it's an interesting question when you're from the political right, you know,
I got a phenotype.
Have you been a product of the welfare state or not?
Oh yeah. And some were phenotypically based. So I got some scholarships just because of my looks.
Mm-hmm. And how about hobbies? We got to ask Natalie about hobbies. Do you have any now, or were you really involved in anything growing up?
Sports.
Yeah.
All the time, every time. If there is a ball, a puck,
a bat,
something for me to chase. I make this analogy, like there's lots of different kinds of athletes. Some are dachshunds, or sorry, not dachshunds. That's a terrible greyhound, right? Where they can run constantly. Dachshunds are not runners.
Yeah.
So they can run all day long, but then some are retrievers. They need a ball, right, to follow it around. Right?
Yeah.
The people that are running, that's their thing. That's
You're a
not
retriever.
For me. I'm a retriever. If there's no ball, I will lay all day long. But if you throw a ball out there, I'm going to run.
Sure.
So I have literally played and done just about every sport I can imagine.
And your family now. You have a big family.
Yeah. We have six children. My oldest is now a freshman at Utah State, and I'm excited. She's doing awesome. And then I've got five other kids still at home, and I've got two girls, then two boys, and then two girls, and it's Anna, Brooke, Cooper, and Dallin, ABCD, and we did that because my wife and I, she has a master's degree, she has a master's in business, an MBA, and everything else. She's very, very smart, but the two of us, because we're so strong-willed, we had to narrow down the alphabet and focus on just one letter to really kind of get the names. Is that pretty funny?
Yes. So I think we should take a break. And when we come back, we will transition into more of the political bent of this conversation.
Now, I'm Natalie Gawker in the Political Dissenter with Shireen Gorbani and Dan McKay. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Shireen Gorbani on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gawker in the Political Center, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. We are talking about conservative ideologies, and we're focusing on you, Dan. And I'm going to turn the time to Shireen for our first question.
So tell me about, is there somebody out there or, past conservatives that you feel like political figures that are inspirational to you?
You know, that is such an interesting question. At different times, and this is the way it is for everybody, right? Where you have, at different times, there's a role model or there's somebody who kind of gets you the next kind of benchmark for where you are in political thinking, that kind of stuff. Very early, obviously, Ronald Reagan was pretty spectacular, right? As far as just the way he handled himself. I loved, during the Cold War stuff and during, as a kid, very formative. You're getting under your desk to practice nuclear bomb drills. I remember those as a kid. Or just stuff. I just remember the way he handled himself from the Oval Office in, direct TV conversations.
Did political talk happen a lot in your household or not really?
No, never.
Yeah.
Like I don't remember it ever being a thing. And I remember my mom would just, when she would talk about it, she's like, "Boy, you know everything but nothing at the same time. How is that possible?" She would just joke with me that way,
Yeah.
And in some ways, I think she was doing that to challenge me to learn more. And at the same time, just like, kind of brushing me off as I had a lifetime of experience.
Did your siblings do they hold similar views to you now?
My youngest brother, Eric, does. So I guess I was a little more too simplistic in my family earlier, right? So I really have two brothers. But then my aunt died, and we had three siblings kind of join us that were kind of fitting in between there. And two cousins that are really sisters, and then a youngest brother. And so there's really six of us now,
yeah.
Right? It's the large extended family. So I'd say my middle brother, he's more of a pragmatist. He just wants to figure stuff out, but he really likes the president. Hates the president.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he started out loving the president. Now
I was like,
president.
That's an interesting combination.
Okay. Yeah, no, it went that way. And then you have, and I say president, I'm talking about President Trump. And then you talk about my youngest brother. He's probably a lot more like me. And then my sister, I call her Irene. She's gay, lives in Ohio, and she's married and, you know, has two kids and they're great. And then, you know, my sister, Camellia, she lives down in California, very much just doesn't care about politics.
Interesting.
She has two autistic kids that she's wrestling with on a regular basis and hardworking lady. And then my youngest brother hates everything about Trump and the president and yada, 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 and loves Bernie, but he'll suffer through Biden.
Dan,
what do you think it is that makes you a conservative? You know, I mean, in my world, I'm right of center because of my affection for free markets and limited government.
Yeah.
But what is it that makes you a conservative?
So I think this is going to shock some of our listeners, this part about what I'm going to say, because I think about this a lot. Mm-hmm. I don't disagree with any of the objectives that Shireen has. Mm-hmm. Literally none of them. Mm-hmm. She wants people to
you
get
don't
along
know, Mom.
Better.
You want a more
here publicly.
Dan, you want a more equal distribution of income.
Yes.
You want people to have
healthcare.
Sure.
Housing.
I want people to have the best healthcare they can get. I'd love for everyone to have a house. I would love, if you go down the list, I want all of those things. The only thing we disagree with is who ought to be the sponsoring, forcing element of who does it.
How do you get there?
We have a few other disagreements.
Well, okay, maybe. But I look at those things, those outcomes. I love all of those outcomes and I want them.
Yeah.
And I personally volunteer, work, and try to make those things happen. But the hard part I always struggle with, and this probably comes back to, and I would say my formative political like understanding, is India.
Mm-hmm.
Like India, if you've never been there and you watch the movies, study the books, and listen to people, I literally walked around for, you know, 2 years and listened to people from India talk about their political ideologies because it's something they talk about every day. You have cars running down the roads, right, with huge megaphones, and people are yelling their political ideologies during your church meetings.
That's what I do too.
Yeah. It's like living in the avenues in India. So it's a very different, and that way I love about India was they were very aggressive about where their political stance should be. And, you know, the communists were very active and the Hindu government was very active, the BJP. And they would like these fights all the time is super interesting to me. But the one thing I saw was it is really hard for me to connect the frustrations that people have in America with the poverty and the loss that I see in India and feel like we aren't miles ahead of them.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, if we could just get what we have from a fairness standpoint and from a governing standpoint and give it to them to allow more upward mobility, we would be far better off because we're so good at it here, even though we are still not perfect.
Mm-hmm. Dan, my son served an LDS mission in Mexico, and he was in what is called real Mexico, meaning the, you know, a part you've never heard of, never seen. It's not a place where Americans vacation, anything like that. But he has similar observations about people and their living circumstances and the incredible system we have here in the United States. But he goes a different direction. It makes him go left. Mm. It makes him want more government, not less.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to hear you kind of explain, is government good to you or is government bad to you?
I probably follow in the, you know, if for those of you who want to, you know, get a glimpse into the things I read for fun, Hamilton, Federalist 51, he wrote Federalist 51. I'd go read it because I see government as a necessary evil.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, bless its heart. It is well intended and everybody in the government wants to do good, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The problem is that I believe there is a fine balance that has to be struck and it requires both all voices at the table. But that fine balance is the difference between putting the carrot in front that people are constantly reaching for versus having the carrot delivered to them. And I think that desire, that growth, that constant building is so productive for people that if you take that away with delivery, it takes away a fundamental strength or a victory in human nature. And that to me, maybe it's philosophical, maybe it's not, but I would just say for the most part, government creates more problems with its actions than it does solutions. That doesn't mean government should never act, because clearly that would be irresponsible, because men are not angels, as Hamilton says in Federalist 51. So if men were angels, we wouldn't need government. And I very much view it that way.
What's an idea on the right or in conservatism that you're excited about right now?
Oh, boy. You know, one thing I am excited about, and it's probably, I like what Natalie said about localism. The one thing I really like is that the left and the right are kind of coming together in this weird way of balancing the economy. You know, if you look at how economic incentives, you hear the recent governor's campaign, right? There was a lot of frustrations about economic incentive and oversubscribing economic incentives to hyperstimulate the economy and then have overgrowth, right? And to grow in an unnatural way. So that kind of conversation is super interesting to me, because one, I haven't answered it. Like, I don't see a great answer anyone doing it. I'm sure Natalie will have an answer for it in a couple of weeks when we give her money to go figure it out. But that's the question. She's laughing, right? That makes her uncomfortable too. But no, I love it though. But see, that's the kind of thing I think I look at how we're shaping economically, because I really do think, and I do think that our future is really tied up in trying to figure out how a shared economy can continue to grow in a natural, organic way without too much robbing Peter to pay Paul.
What do you think is the biggest crisis we're facing, or the biggest challenge that we're facing?
Who's we?
As a country.
Just as a country?
Like, if you could start solving something, some big thing today, what would you go after?
So, you know, Anthony, I'm going to make his job easy. I was going to say something that he'd have to bleep. I just think people, we are talking to each other less and listening more and more to other sources, like media sources, that kind of stuff. And I think the less we are a hometown, good old boy and girl, like talk to our neighbors and that kind of stuff, the less we're that way, the more productive it is to let other people divide us. And I personally, you know, I don't know if it comes through super well in our show or whatever, but like, you know, we have a gay male as a producer. We have Shireen, the ultimate progressive / communist. And we have Natalie who, you know, who would always, you know, solve the world's problems if we would just let her do it. And so it's, and then we have me.
Yeah. And
who,
what are you?
Yeah. And then there's me, who's this, you know, hyper-partisan train wreck. So we got that element of it. Right. But I value this time. Honestly, the listeners don't realize this, and they probably should. We don't get paid for this gig.
Yeah.
But I legitimately love these people. Like, it is fun to be with you. And believe it or not, listeners, this is the first time we've all been in the same room.
For months.
9 months. Yeah.
And it's awesome. And I miss you guys. You know?
Yeah. So do you think the issue is that we talk more to each other with similar viewpoints than we do in complex ways? Do you think that's the biggest crisis we're facing right now?
Well, I would take it one step further, because the talking to people is one part of it, but I think talking creates empathy.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
so
being able to understand what other people are thinking, they're walking. It's the Atticus Finch, right?
Yeah.
If you haven't walked a mile in a man's shoes, there's no way you can judge him or sympathize or one way or the other. That empathy component and being able to understand one another, it is something I am new at, because I will say that 10 years ago, I had no idea what empathy really was, and charity and those kinds of things. And I do feel like I'm growing it constantly, and I'm very fortunate for the people who reach out and say, "Hey, dude, you totally messed this up." And it's become one of the best parts of public service. It's elatant, because I didn't expect this, and I don't go into it for this, but I really do feel like I'm a better person because of service.
Is there something that you would carry into 2021? Something that you're excited about or looking forward to?
And I'm asking really the same question. Yeah. What in 2021 are you going to get done to improve governance
yeah.
in our state, in our world?
Man. I, you know, I don't know the answer. Well, I will say that I am going to ask more of myself. Mm-hmm. And I think, honestly, I think that's going to require more rigor to listen and to try and figure stuff out. Because certainly I have my own opinions like everybody else, but trying to understand more, it's not infrequent that I can sit with the two of you and Anthony, and we can just talk on or off the show about an issue that we're dealing with. And you guys will provide very different perspectives that I had not thought of or heard of or that kind of thing. And it changes the way I look at the policy or that kind of thing.
Thank you, Dan. Natalie Gochner in the Political Center with Shireen Gourbani on the left, Dan McKay on the right. Thanks, everybody, for listening.